Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, joined by Tom Dienhardt and Brian Neubert. I want to thank our sponsors, and that sponsor, the Union Club Hotel, the 811 Restaurant, and of course, the Boiler Up Bar. And of course, for Purdue fans coming to West Lafayette for games, make sure you also check out the renovated sweet shop. A lot going on there with respect to new restaurants and opportunities for eateries, etc. So it's a great addition. Just opened here a couple of weeks ago, and I think the reviews early on have been good. I've yet to get over there, but looking forward to doing so, especially in the patio when it gets a little bit warmer out. All right, guys, we'll start with our conversation. Obviously, basketball. This will be it's a Saturday conversation. So the Boilermakers men's team take on Northwestern tomorrow, Sunday at 1 p.m. Brian, I'll start with you. Obviously, a tough loss for Purdue Thursday night against Indiana. We found out Friday night that it wasn't so easy for Illinois on the road. They got hammered by Maryland. Michigan State goes on the road and wins at Wisconsin. And I guess my first question, just is from a conversational standpoint, is what do you make of that? I mean, a lot of gnashing of teeth at Purdue's loss, but Purdue's kind of has a lot of company with respect to good teams losing in the conference.
Yeah, crazy stuff happens in the Big Ten. It always does. And, you know, especially when you're on the road. Now, obviously the road wasn't an issue for Michigan State yesterday. The road was an issue for Illinois, albeit they didn't have Kofi Coburn. I think that's a pretty big deal.
That is a big deal.
For Purdue, it was just a weird game. It was a game where, you know, Trace Jackson Davis does next to nothing, and you get roasted by two average Big Ten point guards because you're still not in a place from a defensive perspective that you need to be in. That being said, you got all the stops in the last 5 minutes of that game you needed to get until the very last do-over after two Purdue players fight over the biggest defensive rebound of the game. Pure happenstance. It wasn't anything negligent on either player's part. You can't control the ball, and you give up a game-winning three off an inbound to a guy who was having the greatest night of his life. You miss too many free throws. You turn the ball over too much, uncharacteristically. Lately, anyway, that was like a November issue for Purdue that they've done a pretty good job with. But Purdue took a step backward from a defensive perspective. They took a step backward taking care of the basketball. And, you know, there's an old saying, screw around and get beat. Only the word isn't screw. And I thought that, you know, Purdue wasn't quite as focused as it needed to be. I thought it got shook by the environment, which was surprising. Because Purdue's had a lot of success there over the years. They've been exposed to some difficult environments. They've got a lot of experience. Just a weird game. One that, you know, Purdue still had every opportunity to win. Couldn't get that one stop at the end, but like the Rutgers game in Piscataway, it was one of those games where you didn't lose the game on that last shot. You lost the game, you know, well in advance of that. That 14-0 run Indiana had in the first half where Purdue was turning the ball over too much. Purdue triggered that with its own turnovers. They just lost their minds. They lost their composure there for a little while for whatever reason. And that's kind of the power of Assembly Hall. It does that to people sometimes. You didn't expect it to happen to Purdue, but it did. But that being said, also, you have to give a lot of credit to Indiana. That was a tougher, more competitive Indiana team than the one Purdue's basically owned for the last 5 years.
Yeah, winning 9 out of 10 games. Tom, you know, you look at it from a historical standpoint, Indiana-Purdue rivalry, there's been talk about, well, this rivalry is over, which is silly because, yes, Purdue's won 9 out of the last 10 games and dominated, but it was a reminder to some of the great games. Of course, Brian was physically there, had a chance to see that raucous environment, but a reminder that maybe it is going to return to the way it was to some extent. Obviously, Indiana, it was a huge win for its program and Mike Woodson in year one, but probably good to see for Big Ten basketball that Purdue and Indiana have that kind of ferocious knockdown, drag-out basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, to be a rivalry, right? Each team has to sort of have their moments winning.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd say this. It was almost getting boring to beat Indiana.
Yeah.
This is something else I've thought about a lot, flashing back over the years, was, you know, what having a villain meant to that rivalry, too. A villain like Bob Knight.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Focal point of hate for Purdue fans when he would walk on that court before a game in Mackey Arena. It's really added a lot to the whole rivalry that really honestly has lost a lot of luster in recent years because of Indiana's struggles, really. And as much as nobody from a Purdue fan perspective wants to see the Boilermakers lose to IU, maybe they got him a coach finally. Brian's talked about, I think, the effect Mike Woodson's already had from an effort standpoint. He talked about it. They play harder. They play better defense. They're tougher, too. And so it looks like Mike Woodson, at least short term, has provided an injection there. We'll see where it goes from here. But, yeah, like you said, Alan, I'm all about the rivalries. That's what makes sports great. In-state rivalries especially, because you live amongst each other. You see each other. You work with each other. And Indiana-Purdue, I mean, I'm not breaking news to anybody that watches this, but obviously it's one of the great rivalries in collegiate sports. And maybe this is a rivalry that's been rekindled, and it's always going to be a lot more fun. It could be more intense. The guys, the stakes could be higher here moving forward, too, in coming years for not just Purdue, but Indiana, too.
You know, Brian, the way the Big Ten is shaping up, and again, I understand it's January the 22nd, Purdue-Indiana on March the 5th is going to be an interesting game, because all of a sudden Indiana is going to be in the, at least for now, is in the crux of the Big Ten race. The Big Ten race tightened up based on last night's results. It just makes it more interesting, I guess, from that standpoint moving forward, that there's going to be a lot to play for. And to me, too, that it does give Purdue, I know Purdue fans don't want to hear that, you know, losing to Indiana can be beneficial. It never is in the short term. But in the long term, again, getting those environments and getting maybe Purdue's toughness quotient raised, do you buy into that, no. could have a good no. thing down the road? You're shaking your head.
Because it's January 22nd, and if you were going to take positives from losses, you needed to be doing that weeks ago. And I thought that Purdue did that against Wisconsin. You know, they had trended very well, the last three, four games, whatever it is, ever since that Wisconsin loss. I thought that was their turning point. A lot had improved. They'd been better defensively. I thought a couple of individuals had really taken steps forward since that Wisconsin game. But then things kind of took a bit of a step backwards against Indiana. You know, the Indiana game was a little bit of a fluke too, because, you know, this rivalry that creates these rando heroes so often, you know, Sterling Carter, Basil Smotherman, Bryson Scott from Purdue alone, now Robert Finney. I mean, this was just complete randomness. And I mean, he's taking shots he shouldn't be taking for Indiana, you know, and he's making all of them. You know, Xavier Johnson throws in an absolute garbage shot, you know, for a three-pointer to beat a shot clock, and you end up winning this game without, you know, Trace Jackson Davis doing anything. And this is the second game in a row where you've gotten your opponent's best player in foul trouble. He's a non-factor. Your defensive game plan goes out the window. The opponents become more guard and spreading the floor oriented, and that actually works against Purdue's strength. I think a more stationary half-court offense is something Purdue matches up better against. An offense that's going to play through the post is something I think Purdue would match up better against. But when you're spreading them out and attacking off the dribble constantly, that's kind of Purdue's soft underbelly. From a defensive perspective, there's no positive to losing Indiana here, especially in the manner they lost, because for as much credit as you have to give Indiana, there's a lot of areas of that game where, you know, if Purdue was, you know, 5% better, they get that done. I mean, they had so many opportunities, so many open shots. They couldn't get timely shooting. They turned the ball over too much, too many defensive breakdowns. I don't know what was going on at times in terms of against the dribble. There was no help. I don't know what the big guys were doing at times. I'm not sure what's going on with Travion Williams, but a normal last two Travion Williams games, you don't go to overtime at Illinois, and then you probably beat Indiana, because that shot they got him in the final minute was his sweet spot, a shot he's built a whole college career on making in those moments. It just, you know, Purdue has so much to lament about that game. There is no positive that can come from that, I don't think. Unless it just pisses them off. Unless it just pisses them off. And
yeah, that's, I guess, is my Travion Williams.
It's always possible.
If you just don't airball a 3-foot shot, you win, you're ahead by four and the game's over. I mean, there's so many scenarios. I agree with you. I think it's getting past. This is a team that is expected to be in its top 10 ranking or top 5 ranking to get through these types of games. It just didn't happen, and you need to find a way to do it from that standpoint. I mean, I think that's a huge factor, and we know in team sports too, there does come a time where you've got to you've got to be tougher, and you've got to find a way to do it. You got to find a way that to not go 7-for-17 for the free throw line. Tom, I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have something?
Oh, I mean, else again, first of all, my day's made. We got a Sterling Carter reference, so made, man. And you know,
Scooby Scarce back in my day went off against Indiana too, but that's a long time ago.
I guess I would have thought losing to Rutgers would have pissed you off. I would have thought losing home to Wisconsin would have done it too. But who knows? I digress. Like Brian said, I know it's still early. Looking at the Big Ten standings, you got Michigan State with one loss. You got, four teams with two losses. Then you got the group with Purdue. I guess Purdue and Indiana both have 3 league losses. So a lot of time to go. I will say this. A lot of times we focus on the big guys, Williams and Edie. We talk about Ivy. But how about Mason Gillis?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable.
I mean, Brian would write all preseason about how he was going to lose his job probably to the freshman, Caleb First. Well, I'd argue that Gillis has been the best player on the team. And where would they be without this guy who can play inside, can play outside, and every game shows up? And I guess he's one of the guys that seems like you know what you're going to get every time the ball tips off. Can't say that about a lot of the players, but Mason Gillis is a guy that I don't think has gotten enough attention for what he's meant to this team. Kind of always working on the periphery, seemingly, from a publicity standpoint and a notoriety standpoint. But again, I just wanted to give a shout out to that kid and how he's played this year and the value that he adds to this program.
Yeah, he just plays. And, the 1-3 that rimmed out to the one he missed late, you think everything's going in, and they rarely hit. It never really even hits the rim. They're just dead center. He just makes them. And I agree. He has been in a phenomenal, and he got, as you would expect with some of his off court problems, the Indiana fans got into that. He just kept his cool and played, unlike Jaden Ivey, in that situation where he didn't. And that was something I think that Purdue obviously needs to get past if it's going to be the kind of team it wants to be on the road. And Brian, this week, obviously we talked before, even on Sunday's game against Northwestern, we know Northwestern went up to Michigan State and won. They had opportunities to beat Michigan State at home. This is a team that's dangerous. Thursday night, you got another game at Iowa, a team that almost beat you in Mackey Arena. The point being, they're just, from every game from here on in, is just going to be that way. And there may be more losses, but there are definitely going to be more challenges for a team like Purdue.
Yeah, there aren't, it sounds like a cliche, so I hate to even articulate it, but there really are no nights where you can take much for granted here in the Big Ten. Yeah. I think that Northwestern's one of those I would have put down a couple weeks ago as, one of those teams. But, when Pete Nance is good, when Boo Booey is good, when Chase Audige is good, Ryan Young does some positive things every now and then. I think that you got to be on guard. You can't play bad against these guys. I mean, you can probably just play okay and win, but you can't play bad, because if you do, they will beat you. They beat Michigan State at Michigan State, obviously. Purdue, I thought, had done a really good job, after that Wisconsin game, being up for every opponent that came after. And I don't want to say they weren't up for Indiana, because they started that game really well. The first 3-4-5 minutes of that game, they were great.
16-8.
It was
Should have been in hand at that point, but go ahead.
It was right around the time. It was right around, I think, the 11-minute mark where, they started turning the ball over. Travion Williams had a bunch of turnovers in a short period of time. That got Indiana in transition. That got Finney's head up. I think 7 of Finney's points in that first half were off of turnovers, off of Purdue's turnovers, and it just snowballs on you. And it's just like Johnny Davis against Wisconsin, where if Purdue doesn't give him a couple of runouts in that first half, a couple of easy looks off of their own turnovers, he doesn't end up getting 37, because it's like coaches say, you don't let great players get their heads up. In Robert Finney's case, you don't let average players get their heads up. But either way, he got his head up, and you know, I don't think he scored in the second half until that last shot. So it's not That's like right. he carried it over to the second half. But nevertheless, if he didn't have the sort of first half he had, he probably wouldn't have the confidence to shoot those last 2 threes there. Obviously, the first one he missed. Obviously, the second one he made. But that was the definition for Purdue of, you know, good defense starts with good offense. And, you know, it's easy to look at their ball screen defense in half court and say they got a lot of flaws here. That is very true. That is absolutely positively true. There were breakdowns left and right in that second half when Purdue had all sorts of opportunities to put together a run and take that game over for good. But that first half was Indiana's momentum. Purdue handed Indiana its momentum, and that's the reason it lost the game, because if they're not in that hole at halftime, you know, Purdue wins that game going away most likely.
Yeah, I thought Purdue really had a chance to establish itself. You know, yeah, Rob Finney, I thought one of the interesting things is he didn't come back on the court, I think, to the 12:30 mark of the second half. He scores, what 14 points or whatever it was in the first half, and then didn't see the light of day until, you know, not midway, but close to midway into the second half. But, boy, he did hit a huge shot, I'm sure. From a Lafayette, Indiana perspective, having grown up here, that was a big deal for him. But that certainly – one thing I want to ask both of you guys about just on team dynamics, because Purdue fans are interesting. This is a new situation to some extent. It is a new situation for Purdue fans, just the fact that Purdue did get ranked number one. And all of a sudden, you tend to look for every flaw, like, oh, wait, what? This is a sheer sign that Purdue's not good enough to make it to the Final Four, or not good enough to go deep in the NCAA tournament, whatever. On a Friday after a game like that, I take more calls or get more messages from people stressing over the fact of coming up with reasons why there's a flaw in this team which isn't going to make it work out. Brian, I know you're going to have a comment, but Tom, you look at it from that perspective. Is this just people need to relax a little bit and let this season play out? How do you view that?
Well, obviously we're coming up on the midway point, right? They played Purdue's played 7 conference games. They missed the Michigan one, but yeah, obviously game number 10 in the conference will be the halfway point. So yeah, I mean, I guess you never want to push the panic button. And while it would be great for fans to see Purdue win the Big Ten regular season title, add yet another banner to the Mackey Arena rafters. I'll speak for myself. I'm more interested in what happens in March. And, there's plenty of time to still sort through issues. I think those issues the team has had have been well documented by Brian and all the other experts on the message board. And, there's still time, like I said. And to me, March is the measuring stick here. Again, Big Ten titles are great. And again, I never want to say those are irrelevant. They're fantastic. But again, March to me, maybe I put too much emphasis on what happens in the NCAA tournament. But I think for this program, where it's at now, what's happened recently, say for, I guess, 2019, I want to see what happens there. And this team still has a lot of positives, a lot of great things to build around. And it also has, like I said, or I'm referring to, the element of time. And maybe this team is what it is, guys. Again, Brian talked about it. Others have, everybody says, well, I thought after this game, that would have shown them. Well, after I thought after this loss, this would have shown them. Well, we've been through this 3 times now, and I guess we're still seeing some of the same issues. So maybe this team is what it is. Obviously, it's a story that's in progress. It's being authored as we speak. But again, there's always hope that things do get sorted out, issues get buttoned up, and by the time we get to Selection Sunday, they roll the balls out there, and Purdue will really be hitting its stride. Then it can make a nice run in March.
Well, and Brian, I'll let you comment. And Mike, of course, yesterday on Golden Black Live on Friday's show, you know, talked about things that Brian's written about as well. And that is, you know, Matt Painter has a way of figuring things out. This team will have to figure out a little bit how to continue to incorporate Jaden Ivey in that offense. And the way he, I thought he had some interesting comments about, you know, his way he penetrates and how the rest of the team needs to kind of continue to evolve there. Is it as simple as that, Brian? Is it, you know, this is an evolutionary process. I know I keep saying it is January 22nd. You're not in your first game, but you are measured by how much improvement you continue to make. And that should, if Purdue can do that, it is good enough to be an elite program this year.
I think we're talking about a great college basketball team, like they're the Washington Generals right now. And that's the nature of expectations. That's the nature of your ceiling. Yeah. You know, the psychology of the Purdue basketball fan has always been an interesting topic for me, because this place is so Final Four hungry that everything that happens before March that is very oftentimes completely irrelevant to what will happen in March. Everything that happens becomes a referendum on what will happen in March. Yeah, we're never going to go to the Final Four because we were 7 of 17 at the foul line in Indiana. You know, we're never going to go to the Final Four because they let a 19-point lead slip away against Iowa and, you know, had to fight to win at the end. March is different. March is almost a whole different season. It is random. It is matchup dependent. And the game changes entirely when you get out of Big Ten play, because the style of basketball changes, the level of coaching and preparation and familiarity change. Raw talent very often, you know, comes to the forefront much more. This could be a better Purdue team in the NCAA tournament than they are in the Big Ten season. I've said that for weeks now, is that this could be a better general college basketball team than it is a Big Ten basketball team, just because the things that win in Big Ten play aren't necessarily the same thing as you know what often wins in the NCAA tournament. They're similar, but it's a different style of basketball. And you know, Purdue went unbeaten in non-conference play. The only game they really played badly was the NC State game, and they still won that. I think that stuff that happens in the middle of January, there's a certain measure of apples and oranges when it comes to what will happen in March. You know, Purdue's got to be healthy. Purdue's got to keep building up to that. They have to be the best version of themselves at that time. But everything before that is a process. You'd love to win a Big Ten championship this year with the team you have. I think it would be a disappointment if you didn't. But I think everything, if you're focused solely on the NCAA tournament, everything's a process up until then. And the stuff that happens prior to the NCAA tournament is merely part of that process. And I think Purdue fans tend to view everything that happens before March as a reflection of what will happen in March, when in reality, these are long seasons and nobody has any idea at this point what things will look like in a month and a half here. And I think
Brian, did you think this team's better equipped to excel in the Big Ten or in March?
March, without question. March, without question. Well, no, because you have that guy now. Mm-hmm. People nitpick Jaden Ivey like crazy because that comes with the territory when you're elite. That dude is absolutely freaking special. I mean, Purdue may never ever see another Jaden Ivey in this program. He is special, and you know, he's had to be better defensively. I write about that a lot, because that's the nature of his gravity on this team. But he is special. And he's the sort of guy that when you get to March, look out. You know, the reality too is you still have those two big guys who nobody's in these other conferences has seen before. You do have some defensive vulnerabilities here in terms of teams that can spread you out, same as you did last year. But good luck to people in March trying to stop this offense too.
Brian, I was wondering who's the leader? Who's the leader on the team?
I guess it depends on your definition of leadership. I think if you're talking about like being vocal and stuff. I think Mason Gillis has come a long way. I think the seniors are okay. I don't know if that's necessarily their comfort zone. I think Stefanovic does a good job leading by example. I think Ivy's will and Ivy's work ethic are big deals for this team.
There's not a singular guy who's the alpha dog.
I think if Mason Gillis had more, if Mason Gillis had more gravity on this basketball team in terms of his usage, his prominence or whatever, I think he would be. I think he's got that kind of edge to him. He's got that sort of, if you watch Purdue defend, you know, you hear voices on TV, and the voice you hear 95% of the time is Mason Gillis. I think that's a very important part of his value. I don't know if there is that one singular guy, but I don't think leadership's a huge issue for this team the way it was a couple of years ago, where, you know, we thought Nojo Eastern and Matt Harms were going to take that team and kind of run with it, and that just never happened. I don't think this is the sort of directionless ship that Purdue had a couple of years back. I don't think this is like a typical like senior laden Michigan State team when it comes to like, you know, leadership, but I don't think it's a problem either.
Yeah. Interesting. Because I do think it is a common refrain of a concern. Even Matt Painter talks about talking on screens and how certain guys do that better than others. And that is a factor that can be, I think the other thing is, it seems to me, and Brian knows a lot more than I do in terms of watching this team, it is they're a good group of people. They are, and they take losing very personally. You know, not everybody can be that alpha dog type personality. And that is an interesting thing. And I think too, sometimes in 2022, the kids of today aren't always that way. And you got to find it where it is. And that's going to be a storyline to watch. All right. I want to go to one other quick thing as we kind of look ahead, but also look back at the week, Tom. There's been some, been watching football news. It hasn't anything that's happened with the, well, there has been some things that happened, the coaching search, but tell me about your story of the week, and then I'll go to Brian or anything that impacted you that you want to share with the group.
Nothing really impacted me, I guess. I'm blessed by that. But following the what's going on with the staff. Again, four openings. We saw James Adams, the cornerbacks coach, recently leave. That was expected to Wake Forest following Brad Lambert, who left the week before. So you have two spots on offense that are open, two spots on defense. And just some speculation, conjecture, what could happen there. They're still out recruiting right now. I know Jeff Brom is talking to people, and I know he's going to be methodical. And defensively, losing your play caller, a guy like Brad Lambert was well-liked, very respected, good at what he does. You can't soft sell his loss. It sure would have been nice to have him come back. But it has been explained to me, this defensive scheme is not going to change. That happened prior to last year. Jeff Brom knows what he wants stylistically, schematically, alignment-wise, temperament-wise, aggressiveness-wise. He's going to find people that can execute his marching orders defensively. And maybe his play caller for 2022 is already on staff. We'll see. But again, keep an eye on that. And then offensively, guys, you know, Jamarcus Shepherd going to Washington. That's a loss. Obviously, Shepherd's been part of the staff from day one and developed the two best wide receivers in school history, right? Rondale Moore and David Bell. Was a heck of a personality, juice coach, if you will. And you're going to have to find somebody of similar ilk from a personality standpoint, I think, because you can't have a bunch of 50-year-old guys on your staff. You can't have a bunch of laid-back, cool guys. You got to have a nice blend, obviously, of age and youth and energy and whatnot. So, that's going to be a big hire, the wide receiver spot. And of course, Neil Callaway retired. And he may still help from a consultant standpoint, but I look for Brohm to hire another assistant O-line coach, forego having a tight ends coach for a second year. I think he liked having two O-line coaches. We all know the urgency there continues to be a point of emphasis for Purdue, that offensive line. Still working on their numbers. So, kind of watching that. The portal, we've talked about the portal guys. We know what they're looking for there. I think the brakes have been tapped for now. But there's always guys jumping in. And if Purdue does hire somebody, we talked about this. If they do could get a commitment from somebody, they obviously can't enroll now. But still, if you can get a commitment now, I'm sure you would still take him and then he'd come in the summer. So it's always stuff percolating. Brian could talk to this early February, right? We've got a second signing period coming up, and he can maybe discuss what Purdue's plans are there. We know the one nose tackle. I believe that's the only guy that's sort of in the queue, if you will.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a surprise there, but I don't know, Brian, you know anything else going on? What we could expect beyond Connor Lindgren possibly inking in February?
Nope. I think this is a reflection of the times here where everybody signs all their recruits in December. Mm-hmm. And then the transfer market really quiets down right around the start of school. And it just extends out into the spring now. So we'll see kind of what happens in the spring. It's like anything else where anything could happen at any time, but it seems like this thing's on indefinite hold right now. You already mentioned Connor Lindgren, and I think that's really the only ball in the air right now. Mm-hmm. Things should be slow here for a little bit.
So social media has been a lot of offers going out 2023 guys. As far as right now, like you said, I think that is the only ball in here for 2022.
Well, January now for the next class is kind of the new, like April. Everything in recruiting now is moved up like 4, 5, 6 months. So, the in-season visits now are more about juniors and sophomores than they are about seniors. It used to be the other way around. This time now, where people used to be frantically finishing out their senior recruiting classes, they're now frantically starting their junior recruiting classes. It's everything's moved up so much in football recruiting to the point where it's almost getting like basketball, where you have to recruit freshmen and sophomores, which is an abomination in football, but it kind of is what it is.
All right. I will conclude just in my impact of the week. Brian, you're welcome if there's something else you want. Well,
we not going to talk about Meatloaf's death here?
Yeah, no. I think that's what I'm saying. That wasn't mine, but Meatloaf's death was hard, hard for us old guys. I still don't know what was the cause of death.
Well, we finally found out what the one thing he wouldn't do was. It was apparently the vaccine. I don't know that for a fact, but from everything I've read,
Meatloaf
wasn't on board with that, and he might have gotten the old COVID 19er, and it did the old meat man in potentially. I don't want to spread rumors, but that's what indications
Meatloaf,
are.
I mean, that was my senior year in high school, so that hit me. That was an anthem of 1977 and 78.
Yeah, one of those tuxedos, Alan, with the ruffles and stuff.
Oh, God, you see my prom picture is so embarrassing.
The handkerchief, too.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was pastel. That was the problem. But, no, I the Meatloaf thing was it was another reminder. I'll bring out my prom picture. I said I can't do
that. I want to see that.
My date would not agree to it. And we haven't spoken since that night, I don't think. So
it's still time, Al.
Nothing bad happened, but she's a fine.
Is she a Facebook friend?
No, she's not. And she's a fine individual. That part I know, but, and went on to do far bigger things than I ever did, but Meatloaf is, album 77, of course he had another one later.
Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson also, that's Louis right, Anderson. Passed away.
I had a friend in college who did an unbelievable Louis Anderson impression.
Really?
It's what I thought about every time I heard Louis Anderson's name, and now that he's no longer with us too, it's sad.
It is sad. It's great. All right, I'm going to stay.
Life is fragile.
But yes, it is. And I will say my impact of the week was just one of the interviews I was able to do yesterday, and a guy that Brian Newbert knows well and Tom has met, Craig Terrell. One of my favorite people, the former Purdue football player that was a damn good one too. I started 4 years from 2000 to 2003, all Big Ten level player, and played with the Seattle Seahawks. And we had him on Golden Black Live yesterday. Not only did his grandfather pass away last night at age 96, not that he knew that when I interviewed him, but Craig is just the ultimate in reflection and just kind of just a good dude. I love the fact that he's a music guy and that he's got three daughters that he has to try to wrestle with, so to speak. He's kind of a stay-at-home dad now. But Craig is kind of, is just very, kind of a soft spoken, but, just an insightful dude. And we got to talk a little bit of Bruce Springsteen and music, which is always one of my favorite things. I know it's one of Brian's, and he's just one of those guys that, we were lucky. He's a former Golden Black intern. He went through a very difficult time that he never spoke about, at least to us, at least to me, when his father passed away of cancer during his college days. But he is a guy that he is living a good life and very, very impressed. And one of those interviews that you have a chance to watch it great. It's not, I'm not saying it's the world's greatest interview, at least from the interviewer's standpoint, but it is. He is just a good guy and made me feel better after having that opportunity to talk to him. So on that note, he is just a great guy.
One of the all-time greats.
Yeah, he is. And there's just something about him that, you know, he's a tough, tough-minded defensive lineman. He's kind of soft-spoken, kind of chills out, doesn't take, you know, we talked about the Purdue-Indiana game and how difficult that was for Purdue fans, the basketball game, but he kind of has a good way of putting that into perspective too. So we'll hear more from Craig, I'm sure, down the road, as he is a friend of the show, so to speak. All right, guys, we're going to put a wrap on.
Hey, Brian, just real quick on notable passings. I saw this morning, you're a Metro New York guy, the passing of Clark Gillies. You don't know who Clark Gillies is?
I don't know who Clark Gillies is.
Okay, just forget it.
The name sounds vaguely familiar, but.
He was one of the stalwarts on those four Stanley Cup teams for the Islanders.
Ah,
Mike Boss.
That was Dennis Potvin.
Would he have been on the Brian Trottier teams?
Yeah, on all those teams that won four Stanley Cups in a row. Yeah,
Mike Bossy, Dennis Potvin. That was Billy Smith. That was right at the front end. I kind of got into hockey in the mid '80s.
Okay,
so that was probably a little bit ahead of my time. Kelly,
you were a New Jersey Devil guy, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but they played the Islanders left and right. Yeah. So I went to any number of Devils Islanders games. But my early Islanders memories are Pat LaFontaine. Brian Trottier was on some of those teams. Kelly Rudy was the goalie. Who was the one good winger they had on those teams? I think Bossy was done by the time I got.
They won all those Stanley Cups in a row, right? Didn't they win three or four in a row?
In the 70s, right? Or early 80s, one or the other.
80 to 83, they won four in a row.
I got on the Devils train right after they moved in from Colorado.
And they won, and the Devils won a Stanley Cup what year?
Well, funny story. I had tickets to the game where they won the Stanley Cup. But you know where I was? I was in West Lafayette, Indiana on my day on campus to Purdue because I was so eager to go to college. I never bothered to visit Purdue before I decided to come here. So I kind of backed myself in a corner. So my dad and I had to come out here. My mom got to go to the game and watch them raise the cup. And I will never forgive Purdue University for that, even though it was 100%
Purdue's fault.
100% my fault. you know, as soon as I left New Jersey, everybody started winning. The Yankees started winning World Series. The Devils won Stanley Cups. The Jets actually got to the AFC title game 1 year. Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. I was clearly the jinx.
Stay away, Brian. Stay away.
Well, I have stayed away for 25 years.
Good.
Now.
It's good.
Now look at the Jets.
Yeah, it's good when we get into hockey talk because I'm the only one that I think worked professionally in hockey, and I know by far the least of the three of us in the sport. But it is there's some great memories and some great teams, and I do remember because I think the Islanders were the first team in pro sports history to come from a 3-0 deficit to win a best of seven. Absolutely. Too. And that's happened a few times since, obviously, but again, some great memories. We've taken
you from Sterling Carter to Clark Gillies and a little bit of meatloaf. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. We got it all. We got it all. All right, guys. I want to thank
something for everyone here.
I know that's what we're trying to, we're a full service operation. Thank you both. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel, the 811 restaurant, Boiler Up Bar. We'll be back next week. Lord willing, as they say, we'll be talking, obviously there'll be a lot to talk about after the men's men go to Iowa, as well as its game against Northwestern. Any idea, one last question to keep dragging this on, no talk about the Michigan date for that redo yet?
It's going to happen next month. They're going to have to move at least one other game. I think it'll be early in the month, but it's not been set yet. And, you know, there's probably some moving parts there too, because they got to fit in Michigan State for Michigan as well. But everything I understand is it's a go. They're going to do it. They've got the date. I can't say for certain when it is, and but it's all set. They just have to make sure that it all works, and obviously nobody else gets COVID. It's possible. It's always possible too. Always possible too nowadays. Like Penn State just had a game, messed up, and it's possible too that other situations could pop up and throw the whole thing back into the mixer. But as of right now, I think it's going to be early February.
All right. So now we're going to sign off, but thank you all for watching and listening. And we will look forward to next week and a busy week on the site as well. So have a great rest of your weekend, everybody. Thanks to the Union Club Hotel for its sponsorship. And we'll see you next week on our Saturday conversation.